This is Paul St. Peter, the voice of Ninetale Fox from Naruto.
You've been listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Jazz, and you're listening to another Nutty Bites. And today we're going to be talking about indie podcasting versus corporate podcasting. And I don't really want to set this up as like a debate that one is better than the other, but I really want to talk about the differences that these different types of podcasts have, because we are now in a world where podcasting has taken on a new life. Because again. it's no longer the independent people, the upstarts, and people doing something that nobody else has heard of. Corporations and people are making money from this. This is a completely different thing, but there's definitely a difference. With me today, I have, as you've already heard, Mr. T. Morris.
Good evening, Yay. Everybody. Thank you for joining us.
And you've heard also Beth Case.
Hello.
And I invited you both on. I tried to find somebody who was on a corporate podcast and nobody wanted to talk. I think they were a little intimidated.
But it's okay, because I've done corporate podcasting, and plus I work with Stratford University, which is based we have seven different campuses, but we're based out of Fairfax, and we actually host a podcast there as well. I'm not as involved with it, but I have a hand or two in it, so I can.
You got a toe, so you can help us there. Yeah. Awesome, that's wonderful.
Absolutely.
So, first, I wanted to define what I think of when I think independent, and what I think of when I think corporate podcasting. And you say corporate, and people think, oh, that's for profit and everything. It's more, you're getting paid, you're aligned with someone. So, like for instance, NPR. Would be considered corporate podcasting to me, even though they are a nonprofit. Certain publishing companies have put out podcasts. That would be a corporate podcast. But if you're running a podcast and you get donations, I would think that is still an independent podcast. And if you are completely, not completely independent, if you're not getting paid, but you're part of like a podcast network, like the old Farpoint podcast network way back in the day, I wouldn't think of that as a corporate podcast, because Farpoint wasn't paying people to podcast. It was just
actually
a network.
Actually they were.
Oh, well, they were. Okay.
but so let me see if I can help. Let me see if I can help you out a little more and broaden that scope.
Okay.
Instead of it being, because what I would say you just described was a professional podcast versus an amateur podcast.
Okay.
And then much like with Patreon?
Yep.
Much like Patreon and services like Patreon, you would have the semi-pro. When it comes to corporate podcasting, it does not necessarily mean that you're making money. But what corporate podcasting, at least in my mind, the way I define corporate podcasting is, it's not about you. You're not representing you. You're representing a larger entity. In my case, it would be Stratford University. When I was working at Intersections, we had a corporate podcast there, and it wasn't necessarily me, but it was Intersections that it was representing, and it was ID Guardian, which was an offshoot of Intersections at the time. And then when I attempted to do a podcast with the folks over at the MISO Foundation, that was going to be representing the MISO Foundation. I was the host of it, but it was the MISO Foundation that took care of it. Then you've got something like the Shared Desk. The Shared Desk is not a corporate podcast.
Right.
But it is an indie podcast with me and my wife. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Tales from the Archives. Technically, you could say that's a corporate podcast because it represents the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, but I consider that an indie podcast because it's still us. It's still, we're the creators. It's our voices. We're hosting other people's short fiction. And it's not quite a corporate podcast. Maybe you could call it a corporate podcast because it represents the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences series. But I would still put it under the indie umbrella, because the rules also don't apply as much as to when you're doing the podcast for, say, Intersections, or a podcast for the American Public University System, or for Stratford. There are rules when you get into corporate podcasting. And that was the way I would break down the two.
Right. And for instance, you know, Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences is being published by your publisher, but your publisher did not ask you to start the podcast.
Nor are we answerable to the publisher.
Exactly.
So at any time, if the publisher said, well, we don't really like the tone of the content of what you're doing, then we're like, fine, and we remove them from the intro, and we can still podcast.
Exactly. So, you know, that I think is the line in between the two. And so many times people, they, you know, they're like, oh, but NPR, that's a nonprofit, so it's not corporate. It's like, well, yeah, but as you said, it's by NPR's rules.
Right.
This topic kind of, I think, came up from a rant I made on Facebook. which is why I'm here, because I'm not a podcaster anymore. But I was very excited. I found out about this podcast. I wanted to listen to it. And I tuned into my first episode, and it was so overproduced. There was so much background music and I can't even explain what it was. It was like it was too polished. It sounds odd, you know, because quality is important, but I didn't feel like the person was talking to me. Mm-hmm. And even though I know, you know, back in the day when, you know, podcasts were new, I know that, you know, T wasn't talking to me. He didn't know me then when I was listening to his podcast, you know, but I was part of the audience and I felt a personal connection. I felt like these podcasters were talking to me, and they encouraged and welcomed email. And, you
know,
I could.
That was because we just wanted to make sure people were listening.
Exactly.
That's the only reason.
But and having podcasted in that era as well, it was like, yeah, you just want that. You want to know you're not talking out into the void. But I could email T or any number of the other early podcasters and just say, hey, you know, I really love your podcast. And they wrote back. And it was like, wow, how cool is that? And now I feel like I'm part of this community, even though my podcast was very different. And I just feel like today there's not that personal touch. Like if I were to email the person who did the podcast that kind of set me off on my rant, I'm not completely convinced that they would write me back. You know, maybe they've just gotten too big. They can't, I don't know. But I there's a personal feeling that seems to have been lost. And I love NPR podcasts and I listen to a lot of them, but I almost don't even consider those podcasts. It's like rebroadcasts of their radio show. You know, it's the same stuff that you would hear if you turned on the radio.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, that's exactly what it is. The podcast that we do at Stratford is actually it's a replay of a radio show that our CEO, Dr. Richard Schertz, does with a gentleman named Jim Russ. It's called Tech Talk. And I will say this. It's a very fun show. And on top of that, they do entertain emails and live phone calls. So you could probably email Tech Talk, and it would show up in the next show. The tone of it is very light, a lot of fun. It actually reminds me and they even have drop-ins. So it's a little bit like the shared desk. It's actually quite a cool radio show. But the podcast is not done separately. It is a bona fide radio show. Now, over at APUS, my former employer, they did a whole series of podcasts. Now, the way they did it, though, they did not entertain comments. They did not entertain voicemail. It was pretty much a professor got on there, did something that they did, and then they left. And so it was a little more detached. And when you look at the podcasts that are now topping all the different subjects. You know, you'll see like Discovery Channel, you'll see National Geographic, or whatever Rupert Murdoch calls it next week. You know, you'll see NPR, and you'll see ESPN, and you'll see the Oprah Winfrey Network. And that's when you realize that and you know, you talk about rants. I know that I had to roll my eyes a bit when I was hearing people ranting about how Chris Hardwick and the Nerdist and those guys were all talking about the community. Oh, it's great to be part of the community. And here we are, you know, the people who originally started this whole thing. And we're like, guys, you really don't understand. You keep using that word, and I don't think it means what you think it means. And with what it really boils down to is that the audience has changed, the venue has changed. It's evolved beyond us. And we're lucky. We are very lucky if any of these new folks that are dominating podcasts, if these new folks even remember who we are, remember the original vanguard, people like Chris Brogan, people like CeCe Chapman, people like Brian Ibbett, you know what I mean? And the thing is, I see Nutty nodding her head, and I'm sure Beth is nodding her head. And you know, these were all people that we knew or we met at one point. We don't have that now. And the networks, it's really funny because I know we're really going on a tangent here, but I promise I'll bring it back. I remember the very first, I'm sorry, not the very first, the second Portable Media Network, Portable Media Expo, that's what it was called. Then it was the podcast support. It went through different iterations of what they called it. But I remember the overall atmosphere was, we're going to topple big media. Big media won't know what to do with us. Corporate media will fall, and the independent podcaster will rise to the top. And sure enough, big media has annexed podcasting, and it's worse when they take credit for it. And
yes,
but the thing is, they can do that because they have the budget.
Yeah,
yeah.
And as you're talking about this, I'm reminded of Dave Schlusher says this often, talking about one of the early podcasters,
one of the original podcasters. Yeah, yeah, Dave Schlusher.
He talks about this all the time, and how mad he gets when he listens to a lot of comedy podcasts, and he hears these comedians talking about the founders of podcasting and when podcasting started, and they're all many years later, and they're all different people. And it's like, no, let's go back. And it's getting to the point that the Wikipedia article about podcasting keeps getting changed, and they're removing names from it.
Wow.
It's getting really big. They are removing people. And, you know, we all know Wikipedia is user-created content, so anything can happen. But at the same time, this is the internet. This is the age of the internet. This is new media. Where are people going for information? They're going to go to Wikipedia. And when they're removing the original creditors, or when iTunes celebrated 10 years of podcasting, and everyone's like, dude, you're like a year and a half late.
You're a year and a half late. And of course, but they cover their butts by saying, well, that was the year we started podcasting. Well, that's great for you. Yeah. Then celebrate our 10th anniversary, not the 10th anniversary.
Exactly.
For the rest of us, it's the 11th or for some people, 12th anniversary.
Yep.
And there are some hardcore old-time podcasters that are still trying to, you know, rectify and remind people, no, it didn't start with this vanguard. It started with this other vanguard.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just got to learn to choose and pick your battles. I mean, because and this is what I use always as an example. There were two two great examples of when people put their foot in their mouths. There was this one lady who no longer podcasts, I should say, but she called herself on Twitter, the queen of podcasting. She actually called herself the queen of podcasting. And this was back in the day when Twitter was small and was big, but small enough where people could see this in the stream. And I remember everyone in my circles lost their minds. They lost their minds because they were like, this lady's got 4 episodes to her name. She's calling herself the queen of podcasting. And then of course, Murr got mentioned, and then Murr got involved, and it was, I mean, it settled down. It does. In fact, I met the lady, and she's a very sweet lady. She was like, yeah, I was feeling my oats that day. And I thought, yeah, I should call myself the queen of podcasting. I had no idea there was a subculture within the subculture. Now, that was in roughly 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. 2009, people are starting to drop monikers like that, and no one's blinking an eye or wanting to call them because the networks have gotten so big now. But there was another time I remember when I think it was Brown Publishing released one of Ian Banks's novels in podcast format, and they on the blog where they made this grand reveal, they said, we are thrilled to present the first novel ever to be podcast. The comments section imploded. And Scott commented, I commented, Mark Jeffrey commented. But the thing is, we all took the high road. We were like, guys, we understand you probably didn't do your homework or you might have missed the memo, but we've been doing this for years. And we're the three guys that started it. And then the author came on. I think it was before he died. It was Ian Banks. The author came on, and he was like, yeah, someone definitely didn't do their homework. It took me 10 minutes to Google you guys, and then I realized, oh, crap, we put our foot in it, so we apologize. Now, that was back in 2009. I want to say that was roughly back in
2009. Wait, that was 2009? Isn't that after Podiobooks?
That was at least 3 or 4 years after Podiobooks.
To say that it's the first novel that's been podcasted after Podiobooks,
yeah,
is
yeah.
even a thing.
But here's the worst bit. Back in 2009, you would get that kind of apology. Today, yeah. You wouldn't.
No, because we don't matter.
They would probably shut down the comments. They would close the comments, or they would take a different route. And because nobody likes being wrong.
Yeah.
And it is a weird thing. And a lot of times we just say, well, you know what? We should just move on. We should just move on. But it is hard when people try to rewrite history, which is why I refuse to stop podcasting. I enjoy it too much to stop podcasting.
Yep. No, I agree with you completely there. And to me, there are still so many amazing independent podcasts out there. I would say, if I looked at my iPhone and my iPod, because I listen to so many podcasts, I can't fit them all on one device now. I think I only have one corporate podcast on there currently subscribed, which is even surprising because there's so many great independent ones. And as Beth was talking about how, you know, in the old days, you'd write a letter in and you'd get a response. Well, I feel like most independent podcasts, you will still get a response and they're happy to have it. And there are podcasts out there that have built their own communities. I mean, if we go with the old ones, you know, everybody knows that Sigler's fans call themselves the Junkies. Why? Because he had a forum set up, because he had a community involvement. I still identify myself as a Digger, which is a very old podcast, Sci-Fi Dig. I'm in the Flash Mob. There's all these different communities, and it's, you know, and if you're listening to this, you're a mixed nutcase. And you feel, as Beth said, that the podcaster is talking to you. And I am talking to you. You right there in your car listening, that's it. I'm talking to you. And that's a great personal connection. And there are some podcasts that are corporate that can still offer that connection. And there are some podcasts that are corporate that are less polished. And those are the ones that I love. Those I just go for. I'm not trying to say that corporate podcasts and the ones with money behind them are like evil or bad or whatever. I mean, people obviously love them. And if it brings them to podcasting, fantastic. I just get a little miffed when they seem like, oh, no, we started this and there's nobody else out there, just us. That gets a little frustrating. And when people think, oh, yeah, iTunes, that's the only place you can get podcasts, right?
Oh, well, that's been around for a while. But, you know, the other thing I miss is that, you know, podcasts used to play a lot of bumpers for other podcasts, yes, that were similar. And there was sort of this community of podcasters who had similar shows, who really supported each other and promoted each other's shows. I'm sorry about the echo, but I haven't heard a bumper in years. So how do I find those other cool indie podcasts?
Yeah, well, and
that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I know that there was there are certain Facebook groups that actually have like a reservoir where you can go and get random bumpers. But again, that was one of the things that, that I enjoyed, which was being able to connect with other podcasters and say, hey guys, you know, or have a podcast come to me, send me a bumper and say, you know, look, I'm sending out this bumper, my podcast. I think it might be a similar listen. And, you know, and sometimes I would say, yeah, this is perfect. Great. Others, I would say, nah, I'm sorry. It doesn't fit the format of the show. But the thing, I actually want to try to put up a good defense for corporate podcasts, because being that this is my day job, I personally think that if there's love, if there's passion behind the podcast, and it's not being phoned in, then I think corporate podcasting can be a beautiful thing. I mean with Stratford University, Tech Talk, like I said, is just so much fun to listen to. And Dr. Schertz and Jim Russ basically talk about techie, geeky, nerdy stuff. And some of the stuff you walk away from the show is priceless. Like, for example, did either one of you know that as of now, for 2015, there are more deaths caused by selfie sticks than by shark attacks?
Not surprising at all.
Not surprising, but did you know that?
Not off the top of my head, because I didn't think about how many deaths there were from selfie sticks. I wonder how many of those are because somebody beat them with their selfie stick.
No. These are just people that did something stupid. They misjudged where they were standing. They misjudged what they were, how close they were to something, you know. And of course, bad things happened. So anyway, so you know, they do trivia like that, but then they also talk about really cool stuff like. They talk about cybersecurity issues. They talk about they talk about missions to Mars. They talk about all this great techie stuff. And then Dr. Schertz slips in there things about the university, because one of the things that we teach we have degrees in computer information systems. So Tech Talk, which is something we offer for free, you know, both like with the radio show and then with the podcast. It's an ambassador, if you will, to the school, and I think it's a great way to get the name of the school out there, and it's quality content. This was something that I had to really try to get across to the folks at Intersections when I was over at Intersections. I was trying to get a podcast off the ground, and I needed them to do these different things, and they kept trying to say, well, you know, what's the ROI on this? And I'm sitting there going, look, you really can't think about the ROI right now. You really can't worry about the amount of leads. We just need to establish a presence here and offer people something that they want to listen to. And some of the stuff that I was given as far as the podcast, it was about as interesting as watching paint dry. And then it was poor quality. And the reason why I really believe that after I left Intersections, everything shut down social media wise over there where they started farming it out, was because they didn't have the passion.
Yeah.
They really didn't have the passion behind it. And I think some corporate podcasts do have that. And when they do have that, it's fantastic. When it's not there, when it's phoned in, you can tell, which is why NPR is still, in my opinion, one of the best in producing podcasts.
Yeah, because everyone involved loves it. And the corporate podcast that I listen to is Stuff You Missed in History Class. And the hosts of that podcast, and they've gone through a couple of them, have all been history nerds. They love it. And that's why they care, and that's why you listen. I've always felt that if you want people to care about your podcast, you should care about your podcast. You should care about the subject matter. We've got some comments in the Q&A right now. These are our live viewers. And Chris Price from the All Things Geek Network says he responds to anyone that emails into his show. And Chris, I could be wrong, but I don't think you're a corporate podcaster. If you are, I'll bring you in on the call. But that is one thing that I definitely want to bring up, because also Shane Poole says that he plays an advert for other shows on every episode of his shows. And the smaller podcasts are still doing that. The smaller Yes. podcasts are still playing advertisements for other shows. And even some of those that have graduated on to getting big advertisements, some of them are still playing ads for other shows, which is fantastic. And And yes, Chris says that he is an indie podcaster, I believe. I think that's what that no is. See, this is the live, up-to-date stuff that happens when you listen live. And it's great to see that among the smaller podcasters. But I do feel that there has been a lot of people trying to emulate the bigger podcasts. So they kind of drop those bumpers. They stop using them in the podcast because they want to sound like Serial. They want to sound like This American Life. And yes, you want a clean sound. You definitely want a clean sound. But at the same time, you don't want to lose that heart. You don't want to lose that edge. When I was working with CHSR, which is a campus and community radio station in New Brunswick, completely nonprofit. They only have two staff. So everything I did there was volunteer. One of the biggest problems we had is people wanted to sound like the commercial radio, and we kept trying to impress upon them, you don't want to get too precious with it, because one, you'll never want to do another show, and two, it'll lose the heart. The reason why people listen to us is because we are big nerds who love what we're talking about. So
I actually want to touch base on that, but I don't want to dominate the conversation. So I actually want Beth to chime in here, because she's the one that started this whole freaking conversation.
She did. She absolutely did. And I love her for it.
And I'd like to hear from Beth, her thoughts about, not just about the personal connection, but also about the audio quality of indie podcasts. Does that ever detract? Even if it, not just even when it's polished, but even when it's super raw, does it ever detract from her enjoying the content itself?
Well, I mean, yeah, if it's really bad, you just can't listen to it. You know, what was it they used to say in the early days? Content is king, but quality is queen.
I've heard that. I love that. I'm gonna steal that. I'm gonna use that.
Yeah, there was a huge debate about which one was king and which one was queen, and kind of, you know, come out, it's like, well, you've got to have good content, but if your audio, I almost said a word Dundee was going to have to bleep, if your audio is bad, then people can't stand to listen to it. So, yeah, but I just find it really annoying when it's just obvious that so much polishing has gone into it. And you're exactly right when you said they try to be This American Life, or they try to be Serial. You know, I don't feel like the host of Serial was talking to me. She was doing a radio show, you know. But the thing is like I listen to a lot of audio fiction, and, you know, that typically has a lot of production value in it. You know, it may have sound effects, it may have music, it might have multiple actors. But that doesn't annoy me as much as, like, all this, like, mood music put behind someone talking when it's not a story. They're just talking. But if they're going to be saying something that's suspenseful, they put in suspenseful music behind it. That just annoys the bleep out of me.
Actually, I just want to add on real quick to that. One of the biggest tricks that podcasters were doing for quite a while, there was this good trend of putting background music or background noise, and it was a way of overcoming room noise. You know, when you can't get rid of that room noise, or you don't want to invest in the mics, or don't know what to do, people would just throw in music. And I've actually gotten, and I did that for a little bit, and then I realized, no, that's bad. I don't like that. I've gotten feedback from some people with different disabilities or sensory issues or hearing issues that it's really distracting and sometimes painful, that if there's music behind the talking, some listeners can't even listen to it because it bothers them. When my niece was diagnosed with autism, one of the things that I remember is they explained many children with autism cannot handle hearing people sing happy birthday. It drives them up the wall. It's a very common thing. And the reason is, it to them, it sounds like everybody's singing a different song because their brain can't harmonize. And so often, if you've got sensory issues and there's music behind people speaking, you can't actually listen because it sounds like two conversations going on.
So then I feel like I have to put both of you all on the spot.
Yeah.
Because I know that from my own production values with Tales from the Archives. I like when in key moments, putting in some dramatic music, sound effects, things like that. And I've never been told, especially during the Billy Batting's mysteries, I was never told at all, oh, you need to stop with the production.
No. That's different.
Yeah.
I thought I had stated this. That's different when I'm talking about audio fiction
or audio drama
This conversation, and if we started talking about like our Halloween weekend, suddenly they start playing the Halloween theme.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
That's annoying as hell.
Or if I had like theme music running the entire time we were talking.
Yeah, I remember.
It wouldn't make sense.
The method that you were talking about, Nutty, which was the bed music all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, this is going back a ways. Paul S. Jenkins of the Rev Up Review. Remember that one?
Yep.
He would do that. He actually had bed music playing all the way through because he had a vicious air conditioning system. And the only way he could make it sound decent without it sounding like he was in a wind tunnel was to play the bed music. But here's something I want you all to think about, because this was actually when I went to I was invited to be part of a marketing summit, and one of the panels the panel that I was asked to be on was podcasting. The organizer met me, and I got to tell this story again. This goes back to what you were talking about, Nutty, with the rewriting of history. The guy said, yeah, I'm a longtime podcaster. I've been podcasting since 2008. I just nodded my head, and he was like, and he looked at me, and he kind of went, so how long have you been podcasting? And I just looked at him dead in the eye and said, I've been podcasting since 2005. I'm the first guy to ever do a novel from cover to cover, and I wound up writing a book called Podcasting for Dummies. And the guy just stared at me like I was the artifact in the opening of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And he finally said, can I get your number? Because I think I want to have you come and speak at this marketing summit.
That's fantastic.
And when I went to the marketing summit, we actually talked about the renaissance of podcasting. And one of the things I said is, okay, here are the people that are leading the renaissance of podcasting. And I threw up Serial, and I threw up This American Life, and I threw up Tech Talk, and there was one other one that Welcome to Night Vale.
Mm-hmm.
So I put all these up there, and I said, okay, now before you run out right now and create your podcast, look at these podcasts. They all share one thing in common. Can you name them? And if the two of you don't know what it is they had access to a recording studio.
Yep.
Welcome to Night Vale. They had access to a professional recording studio. This American Life and Serial, NPR, recording studios. Tech Talk, it's on WTOP out here in the D.C. area. Again, recording studio. They had the equipment. Doing the podcast was simply just putting together the RSS feed. Whereas when marketers start talking about doing corporate podcasts, you then say, okay, here's what we need. And that's when the person goes, oh, wait, we need to spend money on this? And then instead of getting a recording studio, you're lucky if you get an H1 from Zoom, you know, or if you get a tiny digital recorder and they go out and make a podcast. And you're using the loops that come with GarageBand, or as my wife would say, GarageBand. and that's what I think some corporate podcasts, that's where they fail. It's the opposite of the indie podcast. The indie podcasts are trying really hard to sound like NPR, but the problem is that NPR is the exception to the rule. Most corporate podcasts sound like indie podcasts because they have zero budget and nobody wants to put together a really professional sounding podcast.
Yeah.
So that's why I think a lot of times corporate podcasts don't have the passion, they don't have the heart, because people are told to do it and they don't know.
Yeah.
And they try to get the equipment and it just doesn't work because they're like, I need a budget. You don't necessarily need a budget. When it comes to corporate podcasting, you just need really solid content that is relevant. Whereas with an indie podcast, and by the way, if those guys from the Geek Network, if they want to talk to somebody about Kickstarter or steampunk or any of that stuff, please send them my way, because we got 11 days left in that Kickstarter. But there are some indie podcasts, like you said, that they try really hard. Geek Radio Daily was one of those.
Yes.
You know, but the thing was, Billy Flynn never lost that drive or that passion, which is why it always felt very personal. And whenever Geek Radio Daily pops up, I'm like, I'm in, because I love what he does. I love what he does.
And as you were talking, you reminded me of something. Listening to podcast fiction and listening to indie podcasts since 2004, because I may not have been podcasting that long, I've been listening since the beginning almost. I love telling people, yeah, somebody at work told me about this podcast idea that it's like TiVo, but for radio shows. And I told them it was really, really stupid. And then 2 months later, my job canceled all streaming, and so I had to find things to download, and I found a podcast, and then I became an addict. So it was very, very quick. That sounds stupid. This is the best thing in the world. but it has spoiled me, because indie podcasts generally sound good, because we're so passionate, we're working so hard to make our sound better. And so many times when I listen to an audiobook, I just shake my head. I'm like, it's not as good as I'm used to, because the podcast fiction sounds clearer. There's less echo noise. There's more passion in the voice, whether it's read by the author or not. It always sounds better. There's more of an acting quality going on. I mean, I love A Song of Ice and Fire. I hate Roy DeTrice's reading of it. There are so many better podcast producers that could do a much better job, and I would love to hear those books redone. When I'm listening to CBC up here, anytime they've got somebody on the guest mic, I'm screaming, "Pop filter! Pop filter! You're the Canadian Broadcasting Company. Why does your guest mic not have a pop filter? How come I can hear the saliva in their mouth?" And I freak out in my own little way, because the indie podcasters really, you know, we're doing it in our basements. We're doing it in our closets. We're doing it under blankets. Yes, that can all be taken out of context, and we should use the word phrasing here. We're all trying to find that really clear sound. And the only time that I've ever had an issue with sound quality is when someone didn't want to improve. There is one podcast that I listened to. I thought it had a really great message. The sound quality wasn't good. I contacted them and said, "Hey, can we talk about this? Can I help you?" And I helped them clean up their sound, and their sound got better. And now they're nationally recognized, and it's wonderful. There's another podcast, similar situation. It was a fan cast about a show I absolutely loved. They recorded their phone calls to each other. It was horrible. They didn't want to improve, because we're just geeking out about a show that we love. We really don't care about the audience. Then why are you podcasting it? And that is like so few times that happens. Anytime I've ever heard anyone with a sound issue and I've approached them, they've almost always said, "Yes, please tell me more. Tell me more." And I was the same way when I started, especially. It was, "Your levels are kind of low. Hey, check out this thing called Levelator. All right, we're hearing this. Tell me, you know," and I improved. Whereas, you know, imagine me sending an email into the CBC and saying, "You have no pop filters. Get pop filters." They'd ignore it. They would never even look at that email. So I don't know where I went. I just rambled.
No, that makes perfect sense. And it's one of those things where, again, it goes back to the community aspect of podcasting, that we, you know, if somebody really enjoy, because for the longest time, I thought my podcast sounded great when I first started Moravi and Billy. And there were people that were writing me going, "No, T, your sound is great, but don't you hear that fan?" And I honestly didn't know what they were talking about until I switched headphones. And when I switched headphones, I suddenly realized that they were talking about my computer. And I honestly didn't know. But the first thing I did was I said, okay, I got to solve this issue, and I solved it, and everything's good. We're done. Yep. I feel very lucky that I've got the equipment that I've got, and that I've learned things. I mean, I don't know everything about audio production, but I know enough to be dangerous and to be able to, you know, I've been told for some of my auditions with ACX that they go, you know, I'm sorry, you're not the guy, but wow, you got a great sound.
that's a compliment.
And I'll take that because there's some stuff on ACX, like you said, that is just terrible. However, you know, I will say this. Pip and I are kind of sweating bullets because we are going to do ACX versions of the books that that we're offering in the Kickstarter. The problem is that the guy who did our audiobooks, his name is James Langton. Mm-hmm. He did them for, you know, Phoenix Rising all the way up to The Diamond Conspiracy. And the guy is astounding. He is just brilliant. And those are the footsteps that we're following in. So unlike you, Nutty, where you're saying, yeah, I really love the books, but I can't stand this particular reader. It's the opposite for us. We love this reader. We just can't afford him. So, you know.
Well, that is the problem. I mean, like, for instance, the Dresden Files, I absolutely love hearing James Marsters read those, or Stephen Fry doing the Harry Potter books, or Jim Dale doing the American Harry Potter books. You know, there's some really great ones. But when you listen to a lot of audiobooks, a lot of times you're like, why did they pick this person?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm listening to the Dresden books right now, actually. And I'm so glad that somebody taught him how to say sigil and runes. Because in the first book, runes was ruins.
Yes.
There's one syllable, runes. And he said, what was it, sigil instead of sigil?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's like, if I have to listen to this guy mispronounce these words, I can't do it. By like the second or third book, someone had corrected him. I was very happy.
So I just want to address the other comments in the Q&A right now. Chris Price from All Things Geek Network says again, the bad sound drives me crazy too. I have a radio broadcasting degree. I left radio because of the corporate frame of mine and no money. Yeah, yeah. It's a shame.
Terrible money in radio. Yeah, terrible money in radio.
Because radio, like WKRP, yeah, that doesn't exist anymore. No. That's volunteer radio. That's what's going on there. And corporate radio is just pre-programmed, and ooh, it's hard. It's hard. Shane Poole, which I'm not sure I mentioned his podcast. He's from the Red Dwarf Introcast, the Prisoner Introcast, in the Village. And oh, Lexicon, the Lex Introcast. He says his first podcast he listened to was in late 2009, and the first time he recorded a show was 2012, which just goes to show that, you know, indie podcasting is still happening, and people are, especially with Shane, you know, these obscure TV shows, they find something they're passionate about and they go with it. And I love that. I love that. So before we wrap up, I want you guys to just give me some honorable mentions that are good reflections of this. For instance, I had mentioned a corporate podcast that is doing it right, was How Stuff Works, which, by the way, when I emailed them once, they did respond to me. So kudos on that. You know, give me something from the indie side and give me something from the corporate side that you can tell me is doing it right.
Ladies first. Beth, you go on ahead. I have to think about it.
Sorry, I thought she was asking the audience that to type in their
choices. No, they're not fast enough.
Wow. You know, I think really the only what I would call corporate podcasts that I listen to right now are either from NPR or the BBC. And I don't feel that community and connection with them, but I don't expect it. Mm. It's just more a way to listen to the radio shows I like without having to be at the radio at a specific time. Independent podcasts, for the most part, I'm listening to, like I said, audio dramas. So the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, of course.
Ding.
And you can pay me later. Podcastle.
I will. As soon as it's delivery time, we will.
The Podcastle and Escape Pod, you know, that group. I also listen to a lot of genealogy podcasts. I'm a huge amateur genealogist, and there's some good genealogy podcasts, Genealogy Gems. I can't think of the others off the top of my head, but that just give you really great tips on how to do it well and document your research and that sort of thing. So that's pretty much all I'm listening to right now is either audio drama, audio fiction, or genealogy.
Awesome. T?
So I mentioned a lot of the podcasts that I respect, ones that I've either done a little bit of advising on currently at Stratford or otherwise, but I've done very little because really everything at Stratford is taken care of and they do their thing. But if you're ever looking for a corporate podcast with a lot of heart, I highly recommend Tech Talk. It's just good fun to listen to. I would echo what Beth said about BBC, and one of the reasons why I think BBC is doing it right is that they have a strategy about it. For one thing, the podcast is sort of the DVR approach to their audio. They basically say if you missed it, go on ahead and listen to the podcast. You know, and that's for people who are just tuning in. But they openly talk about the podcast on BBC Radio. And then they read comments from Twitter and from Facebook and all that on BBC Radio. So they're making at least an effort to do something with that community, and I respect that. And even on BBC BBC America, or not, I'm sorry, not BBC, but BBC News, the BBC News podcast, not only do they give the commentator's name in the lower third, but underneath the commentator's name, underneath the journalist's name, they put their Twitter handle.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is a nice way of letting people, you know, go on ahead and contact them. So as far as corporate podcasts, you know, I've mentioned a few on here, and I would still stick by those. One podcast that I'm really glad has come back is The Voice of Free Planet.
Ah, that was mine. Because I wanted to bring it up because they're emulating This American Life, but they've got the heart. Yes, because it's Galactic Broadcast Network.
I've heard This American Life, so I didn't know that. Yeah. I just thought Jared was being the creative mastermind that he is.
That's it's
Jared.
Definitely creative. It's complete mastermindry. It has that feel of, okay, he's working at an NPR type place, but there's vampires, time travelers, zombies, and you know, corporate magic working.
Now if you want an indie podcast, though, because yes. I've done some voice work for them. If you want an indie podcast that has a corporate backing, but it's a corporate podcast because it is representing a larger entity, but it's totally indie because basically the producer's boss just said, yeah, that sounds like fun. Go with it. It's the Coxwood Family Fun Park podcast. I believe that's what it's pronounced. The Coxwood Family Fun Park podcast. And it's produced by Katie Briskey.
Ah, yes.
And it is it's a loving nod to the Black Creek Pioneer Village, but it is a total spoof, and it is so much fun to listen to. And Katie brings a lot of heart to that, and she brings and so I can't say a bad thing about that one. That's a good one to listen to. Yeah, good. Some really cool stuff is happening there. You're absolutely right. You know, we still have indie podcasts. I think my biggest concern, if there is a concern, I don't mind there being so many corporate podcasts. I just really have a tough time when people rewrite history.
Yeah, agreed.
No hate on Chris Hardwick. No hate on Chris Hardwick. But before you, Chris, there were other people. There were other people that were doing this, and they were making the mistakes that you didn't make.
Yeah.
And you know, Chris is going to make a whole bunch of mistakes all on his own. But the ones that he's avoided is because people like Michael R. Meningay and Evo Terra did. You know, and I just that's the part that if I had a little parting wisdom to anybody listening to this particular podcast or watching right now, it's remember your history. Do some homework. Remember your history.
Yeah.
Know when this whole roller coaster ride started.
Absolutely. And one last thing for indie podcasts. If you're looking for community, if you're looking for somebody to respond to you, I've said this from the beginning. Think of your favorite TV show and Google that and podcast, and you will likely find somebody doing something you love. And if you add IntroCast to it, oh boy, will you find good feedback, because almost all of the IntroCasts are fantastic with giving feedback. So you pick your favorite show, you type it in there, and you find somebody geeking out about something that you love. And when you send in an email, they read it, they respond to you on air. It's wonderful, and it's a big old love fest. So thank you, everybody, for joining me. I had a lot of fun. We could probably talk for another 5 hours about this. But this was a great brief touch up on it. It's something I'm constantly wanting to talk about, but I didn't want to sound like a petty person just sitting here going, "Ah, all these newcomers, meh, meh, meh." But we were able to address the good and the bad of both. Yeah, get off my lawn. Get off my RSS feed. If you guys could tell people where they can find you on the internet, and I'm going to hijack this just a little, but especially T, tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter and where people can go in a couple of minutes.
Yes, I will make it very brief. So we are currently, we being me and my wife of infinite and awesome, Pip Ballantyne, we are currently hosting a Kickstarter. It is a Kickstarter to fund the publication, a self-publication of the fifth book in the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences series, and that is called The Ghost Rebellion. Now, here's the good news. The good news is we've already been funded. The Ghost Rebellion is happening. Regardless of what happens in the next 11 days, the Ghost Rebellion is happening. But this is where the danger of Kickstarter happened. We had a stretch goal at $15,000 that we would not only publish the Ghost Rebellion, we would also be able to publish Operation Endgame, which is the final mission of Agents, Books, and Brawn. And we are less than $3,000 away from funding that. I mean, less than $3,000 away, and we have 11 days to pull this off, and it's too close. I want this to happen. So now, instead of saying, "Well, yes, we're trying to fund the Ghost Rebellion," I'm like, "Well, now we want to see if we can fund two books instead of one." I'm greedy that way. So you can go on ahead and go to ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com, follow the links over to Kickstarter, or you can just go to kickstarter.com. And at Kickstarter, do a search for either Philippa Ballantyne or T. Morris or the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, and you should find the Ghost Rebellion. And we will go, you can watch the video, you can look at all the add-ons. We got a metric ton of add-ons that we've been throwing in there just to get the wheels spinning. In fact, one of the new add-ons that we just unlocked is a collection of novelettes, which is roughly 10,000 to 20,000 words apiece. Pip is doing Wild Swans and The Little Mermaid as steampunk, and I'm doing Aladdin and his wonderfully magical lamp. And then I'm actually writing for the first time, so it's going to premiere for the first time anywhere. A steampunk version of Little Red Riding Hood called Captain Red. And you know, that's an add-on. We've got keychains from Brute Force Studios. We've got ministry T-shirts. Go on ahead and check us out and help us get to 15,000. We have 11 days. I think we can do it.
I think so. Beth, is there anything that you want to plug?
Well, it sounds like I need to go back to the Kickstarter and up my donation again, because now there's new stuff in there. Ah! I saw the T-shirt, and I was all like, "Ministry T-shirt!"
T,
so
you're
excited.
Bleeding or dry?
I know, seriously.
That's the whole intent of the Kickstarter.
See,
just think of it as Christmas
having...
for yourself, okay?
You have to have all those little add-ons, because I'm like, "Oh, it's just another $15. Oh, it's just another $20," and
that's
it gets
how we
up
get
and
you,
up.
Baby.
And, yeah, exactly. Not so much anything to plug. My podcast was Disability 411. It ran from 2005 to 2009 or 10. It went about 10. It went about 5 years, and then I went to graduate school and. Yeah, grad school took my time away from podcasting, but I was there in the early days. If you want to check me out on Twitter, I'm Beth_Case, and that's probably the best place to find me.
Awesome. And she's a great conversationalist. All right. Thank you, everyone. So tell us, what are your favorite indie podcasts? What are your favorite corporate podcasts? What do you like about each of them? What do you hate? You can send comments to nuttybites@nimlast.org. You can go to nimlast.org. You can go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can find on Twitter, Google Plus, everything. You'll hear all the details at the end of the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. This has been a blast. Bye.
I'm the first of a new kind of human being, the first and only true artificial intelligence. I'm not a huge fan of that term, though.
I prefer not to use the term stranded time traveler. I am merely on an extended vacation against my will.
Talking with normal people is almost impossible. I'm constantly on guard. What did you do over the weekend? I definitely didn't drink any blood. I'd never do a thing like that.
I mean, brother, when you crash your spaceship on Earth, you are pretty much shit out of luck.
We don't need aliens anymore. Not when people have Twitter and YouTube and podcasts and Periscope and Voibox and Winger and heaven knows what else.
I don't see the point in anyone living in the coffin.
Right? Who benefits from our silence? Certainly not us.
Look, I could take out this interview guy. I mean, I could, like, wrap this chain around his neck and kill him right now.
Do you have any more questions for us?
Well, I got a few, so if you want to hold off on wrapping around the chain, that would be good.
This is Jared Axelrod. Join me on the voice of Free Planet X, where I interview aliens and time travelers, vampires and witches, advanced AIs and ancient monstrosities. It's This American Life for a science fictional universe, and it's only at planetx.libsyn.com.
Nutty Bites is produced at Nimlast Studios. You can find us on the web at nimlaststudios.org. This work is created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported International License. What that means is you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it, you can't change it, and you have to link back to me, my site, and everything. You can comment and send feedback by going to nimlast.org/nuttybites. You can go to facebook.com/group/nuttybites. You can call the comment line by going to 347-NUTTY42, or you can find me on Twitter, you can search on Google+, you can search the web, you can find me everywhere.